this field is relatively new. It's really growing exponentially, so it's a really exciting time, I think, to be a bioengineer because we're really at the frontier of this technology. But that also means that we still have those challenges to circumvent.
Kia ora, and welcome to Our Changing World. Co Clerk and Canon DNA. Now, bioengineering is a massive field that looks at different medical or biological challenges and tries to find applied solutions for them. And today we have two stories for you from this area of science. Later, Katie Gossett meets the team behind the design of a new simplified tracheostomy kit, which has the potential to save lives around the world by streamlining in-the-field operations. But first, Dr. J.D. Cabral is excited about the potential and future of bioengineering, but in particular, the area that she is focused on, 3D bioprinting.
So my name is J.D. Cabral. I'm a senior research fellow in the chemistry department here at Otago University, and I've been attracted to the bioengineering program here at Otago and using the 3D bioprinter to make regenerative constructs.
So what's a regenerative construct? Well, we'll get to that. But suffice to say that while you've probably heard of the fun stuff that 3D printers can make,
we have 3D printed dresses that look amazing, dresses we couldn't design any other way.
And of the harm that 3D printers can do.
Spanish police have dismantled an illegal workshop that was using 3D printers to make guns.
This is the story of how 3D printers can be used to heal and rebuild you. Now, if you've come across a 3D printer before, I'm guessing it was similar to my experience. A small boxed piece of equipment where plastic is fed in and melted and then laid down layer by layer to form the 3D shape as determined by a computer file. So your regular 3D printer, you have a few things to consider. What kind of plastic you want to use, maybe the colour of that plastic, and of course, the 3D shape of what you want to make. Bioengineers working with bioprinters have kind of similar considerations, but with far more options.
So this is my PhD student, Mina.
Hi, how are you?
So this is the 3D printer.
This is the GSIM Bioscaffolder 3.1. So we got this in 2017. And as you can see, it has four axis heads. We're using the middle one right now for soft gel extrusion.
First, instead of plastic, they will use something that is compatible with being inside a person. And what they choose to use depends on what the aim of what they're printing is.
So we use biomaterials, which means that they're materials that are compatible with living cells and living tissue. And they biodegrade. So, for example, when you're developing an implant, if she's making this bone regeneration scaffold, you want to be able to implant them, and then you want them to degrade over time. You don't want them to be a permanent fixture. And so you're safely delivering those cells that you've encapsulated or seated on top of your scaffold and basically trying to regenerate tissue for whatever injury or 3D model tissue that you're trying to build.
The term JD uses is bioink. And you can have bioink that tends to be firmer, more like plastic, or ones that are softer and squishier, and better vehicles for cells. Again, what you use depends on what you are trying to do.
Typically with the synthetic biocompatible polymers, they are mechanically strong and they last longer. So that's preferential for some, you know, types of tissues, for example, like bone. Other types of tissues are soft tissues where you may want biocompatible natural polymer, water-loving systems such as the hydrogels. And more importantly, the cells are happy to be within these encapsulated systems so that we can extrude them, put them in the shape that we want, and then ideally be able to implant them back into the patient.
You heard JD mention cells there. This is the second consideration. So instead of, you know, choosing the colour of the plastic, bioengineers can choose what they want to add into their bioink or attach to it afterwards.
So generally, there are two different types of materials you can use for this type of tissue construction. You can use a material that you can seed cells onto, or you can use a material where cells are encapsulated within. And so the ones where the living cells are encapsulated within are referred to as hydrogels. And so the hydro refers to high water content. So these high water content hydrogels are made up of polymers that degrade, biodegrade, or bioabsorb naturally and mimic physiological tissue. So we ourselves are made up of lots of water. So the cells are happy in these hydrogel bioink systems.
So cells are one option for fancy add-ons to your bioink. And the potential here is that you could use the patient's own cells by taking some of their stem cells and growing them up. And another option is to put protection against bacteria, for example, if you're aiming at wound healing. Or you could add molecules that will encourage the bone cells in the body to grow, say if you're trying to help mend a broken bone. Of course, the third consideration is the structure. And here the 3D bioprinter that they used provides a couple of options of how things can be built.
So this type of 3D printing is a pneumatic pressure extrusion. So we have compressed air in a tank, and we have pressurized control through various valves. So we can control the rate at which the bioink is extruded. And it's in combination with scaffolding design software, so we can create the microarchitecture and structure that we want to best replicate the tissue of interest.
The structure that JD is trying to replicate at the moment is the complexity of blood vessels, or vascularization. It's a key step, she says, in achieving one massive overarching goal.
So the reason why vascularization is so important is that's the limiting component to create 3D bioprinted organs. So instead of being on a wait list, if you were in a car accident and you need a new liver, for example, some people wait for years and may never get a replacement liver. And so the idea is to harvest your own cells, grow them, put them into a bioink, reconstruct the architecture to rebuild your personalized liver, and then implant it back into you.
How amazing would that be? But breaking this challenge into bite-sized chunks, JD is starting with building those blood vessels and developing a wound dressing.
So as a part of that, as a step towards that, I started to think simply in terms of skin. And so to create a living dressing, which was designed using core shell 3D bioprinting technology. So one of the axes that you can see has the one closest to you, has two ink cartridge holders. And so there's a component at the end where they both feed into. And so I can put a core bioink with endothelial cells, which make vessels. And then the shell ink that surrounds that core strand will contain mesenchymal stem cells, which can specialize into different cell types, like connective tissue cell types. And then I can print a scaffold coaxially. And then I've also designed the core bioink to degrade more quickly than the shell, so that I could create these hollow tube microarchitectures where I've deposited these endothelial cells and I'm kind of directing them to create the vasculature that we want. So this is a first step in terms of creating a living dressing, for example, to treat non-healing wounds such as diabetic foot ulcers, where people have lost their regenerative capability. If you're able to harvest cells for them, put them in this construct and apply it, we would not only be able to heal the wounds, but we would be replacing that tissue with functioning tissue and not just scar tissue.
Working away in the lab with the bioprinter when I visited is Mina Rajabi, a PhD student who has been researching how to make a biodegradable scaffold that could help broken bones heal.
The idea is that generally bone has a limited capacity of regeneration, especially at larger size. So we use the synthetic scaffold to help the regeneration of bone for the fractures that can be caused by trauma, accidents, or even tumor resections.
And so something that you're thinking really hard about is just getting that timing right, so you can use the 3D bioprinted scaffold to help the bone knit together, but that then degrades just at the right time.
Yes, because the problem with the metal scaffolds is that the patient has to go through several surgeries, and it's going to be either permanent in the body, which has other immune rejection problems. But with these ones, it's just helping the natural bone to regenerate without causing the other problems.
Very cool. So instead of using like metal pins when you're trying to fix bones, you would be putting in your 3D bioprinted scaffold, which would help the bones knit together and then naturally degrade at the right time.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you also putting some bone stem cells in the hydrogel? Is that part of it to help improve that bone healing?
In my case, I cultured the cells on top of my 3D printed scaffold after 3D printing. But I use chitooligosaccharide in my formulation, which this one helps osteogenesis of the stem cells after 3D printing.
So these chitooligosaccharides that Mina mentions prompt bone cells to grow more bone, a process called osteogenesis, giving a helping hand to the healing. With her scaffolds, Mina has been doing a lot of different tests to make sure that they are fit for purpose.
The first part is just the physical and if it's stable at body temperature and physiological body liquid. And the next part is the biological performance of the scaffolds.
And why bioengineering? Yeah. How did you get to here?
My background is polymer engineering, which was more related to material science. But I always had this eager to help people and be in the medical science. So I found bioengineering as a bridge between the engineering and biology. So it satisfied my desire.
These characterization tests show good results, Mina tells me, but it is still early days, as it is for JD's wound dressing. So far, they have tested it on cuts in cells in a dish.
We can grow skin cells in a tissue culture dish, and we can wound them, which is basically making a big scratch into the dish. And then we can measure the rate of wound closure, and so how quickly that wound closes. And then we found in the presence of our living dressing, there was a significant increase in wound rate, closure, and healing.
But soon, well, depending on the outcome of a grant she has submitted, JD hopes to work with collaborators to test this wound dressing in a mouse model. She is also working on other projects. What she has developed for the wound dressing might be able to help with burn injuries, and she is helping other researchers by building 3D cancer models for drug discovery. When I ask her about when we might expect 3D printed organs, it's a typical scientist answer for this kind of big advancement question. We don't know, there are a lot of challenges to overcome, but she hopes that we will see them within decades. In the meantime, JD is excited to contribute and be working towards this big goal that has the potential to help a lot of people. Thanks to Dr. JD Cabral and Mina Rajabi in the Department of Chemistry at the University of Otago.